Greetings and welcome to Understanding Israel-Palestine Beyond the Walls on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I am this week's producer, Jeremy Roth-Kushel. For this week's program, I speak with journalist and managing editor of the American Prospect, Jonathan Geyer, about his articles titled, Biden Advisors Ride on Pegasus Spyware. The NSO Group has for years enlisted powerful consultants to save its reputation, and corruption is what other people do, hoping to further understanding. Israel-Palestine, Beyond the Walls. This is Jeremy Roth-Kushel with Understanding Israel-Palestine, Beyond the Walls. I'm happy to be joined today by Jonathan Geyer. Jonathan Geyer is a longtime journalist. He is the managing editor of the American Prospect, where he writes about foreign policy and national security. He has written for The New Yorker, The New York Times, The Paris Review, and Rolling Stone, among others. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jonathan.
Great to be here, Jeremy.
Our main focus today is going to be the ongoing story of the NSO Group, their Pegasus spyware based out of Israeli military intelligence, but the corporate sector. But you and your background in terms of foreign policy and national security journalism will help fill in for our audience the larger structure of American politics in which influence and strategy and corporate desires play a major role in terms of what I might term the capture of policy concerns. But before we turn to some of your articles that have to do with the larger aspect of the way that corruption in an American context, there's a blind eye to it because of the structural component of this. Let's go directly into the heart of this story about the NSO Group from an American context. Will you fill us in based around an article that you wrote, published July 21st, titled Biden Advisors Ride on Pegasus Spyware?
Absolutely. So around this time, the Washington Post and a consortium of international news outlets revealed incredible new details about the Israeli firm NSO Group, which has intense ties to the Israeli security state, of course, and has a software known as Pegasus that can crack into phones, has been used to target dissidents all across the world, has been implicated in a slain Mexican journalist and the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. In that case, Jamal was said to have been hacked by Pegasus. So the Washington Post and 16 other major news outlets reveal all these new details about targets of Pegasus, including, according to some of the lists they've obtained, may include heads of states. So what I've been following here in Washington is all of the power brokers and operators and current and former officials who've worked for tech companies or defense companies, among them the NSO Group. And what I came to realize is that someone who's been floated as a potential Middle East envoy, he was Israel ambassador under Obama, Dan Shapiro, had been consulting for the NSO Group and basically another major strategic consultancy, a firm sometimes called a shadow lobbying firm. They don't quite do lobbying, but they do everything but lobbying, helping companies break into arenas known as Beacon, where other former Hillary Clinton staffer and other kind of key Washington operators, they had been kind of a shadow counsel for the NSO Group, thinking through worst case scenarios. Now, one can make the argument, well, Dan Shapiro ended up resigning and not working very long. I think he worked less than 2 years as a consultant for the NSO Group on a freelance basis. But for me, the bigger story is this structure where a quite nefarious company whose software is known to do bad work would even go and seek out the counsel of really seasoned diplomats and Washington operators. And then I started digging a little deeper, and the Washington Post has done great work on this too. How many people in Biden's orbit were involved in this? So Jay Johnson, who for a moment was under consideration to be defense secretary for Biden, He had advised NSO Group. There's another consulting firm run by Anita Dunn, who is this close confidant of Biden on domestic policy, and her PR firm was working for them. And it's a kind of Washington swamp story that I found very revealing in terms of the companies that behind closed doors, quite powerful people are willing to work for.
And it has just come out in the last 24 hours out of the key locus of the academic and technical investigation into the NSO Group, its Pegasus spyware, the University of Toronto Citizen Lab. And they have just recently released a report showing that a group of Bahraini activists have been apparently targeted by the Pegasus spyware. So this story continues to evolve and unravel. Will you take us a little bit more into this deeper background of how much potential strategic compromise you found in relationship to some of these key Biden advisors? You mentioned Dan Shapiro, who I believe was the Obama administration's ambassador to Israel. In fact, when the Trump administration came in, he ended up staying in Israel for a few months thereafter and apparently working, as you pointed out, in relationship to Israeli companies, some of which we don't actually know. And there are some key pieces that you brought up in your articles about Dan Shapiro specifically, who's being floated as the potential Middle East envoy for the Biden administration, which would include that he delivered a friendly speech to the hard right Shurat Hadin organization, has a child in the Israeli military, financial stake. So can you use this example of Dan Shapiro to further exemplify what is going on in terms of the West exec advisors and how they deeply populate the highest levels of policy making in the Biden administration?
So just to step back a little bit, really what I'm interested in broadly are how in the foreign policy, national security realm, doing this kind of consulting work, working for corporations, just hasn't gotten that much attention. So it's very interesting that Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, started this firm called West Exec Advisors. And at this point, about 17 key personnel, senior national security people, national intelligence, worked in his boutique advisory firm. Boutique meaning it's a small firm, so that's a lot of people. Dan Shapiro, former ambassador to Israel under Obama, he was brought on very early as an advisor. But here's the kind of funny piece of reporting I dug up. West Exec, they represent Boeing. They represent a lot of big corporations and startups in the defense world and just corporations in general and banks. But when the NSO Group, this Israeli spyware company, came knocking on West Exec's door, they turned them down. That was kind of beyond the pale. And certainly would have been something that might have come up in Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State's Senate confirmation hearings, or the number of other officials. For some people in Washington, working with NSO Group is just unthinkable. It would be very damaging to their careers. But what many may not have known at the time was that in an independent capacity, Dan Shapiro was already advising the NSO Group, the Israeli spyware company. So it just goes to show how these connections, I mean, I learn a lot of this information from ethics disclosure forms, public disclosures that officials have to make if they are going up for an appointment in the administration. And people just disclose as very little as possible. So, Jeremy, it becomes a little Talmudic to try to read between the lines of these ethics disclosure forms. Dan Shapiro is not formally yet up for an administration job, so I don't have access to his current financials. But looking at someone like Tony Blinken or Avril Haines or any of the number of 17 or so West Exec consultants who are now in the administration, you can get a pretty decent sense of the corporations that the Biden administration is wrapped up with. And by the way, a lot of them have a presence in Israel. If you think about Microsoft, where Jake Sullivan, national security advisor, consulted for, served on a private advisory role to the executive of Microsoft. Microsoft famously tests its technologies in various capacities in the occupied territories. And it's fair to say that almost every company that's a major global player is operating in a lot of Middle Eastern capitals that have major implications for national security. And then, you know, start to raise questions about conflicts of interest. So if someone like Dan Shapiro was advising the NSO group on whether they ought to or not sell their technologies to Saudi Arabia, an egregious human rights violator, and this is something the New York Times reported, one wonders how would that impact the advice Shapiro would give as an informal advisor to the Biden campaign, which he was.
And as we turn to this understanding that your journalism helps us with, this idea of the larger macroeconomic, the structural component of this, what is really in many other countries would be called political corruption and this revolving door, it definitely harkens back to President Eisenhower's warning about the influence of the military-industrial complex originally with the congressional piece put in that speech. And now I would assert that now we're talking about in terms of the U.S. Israel special relationship over decades and decades. We're talking about something like an occupation industrial complex that involves the testing of these weapons, whether cyber or kinetic, on a captive population in terms of the Palestinian people. And then in a post 9/11 world, the second to last chapter of Naomi Klein's book about disaster capitalism titled The Shock Doctrine, Losing the Peace Incentive, points out exactly how these kinds of technologies were marketed by the highest levels of the Israeli government, almost as if Israel were a cyber mall to the world in terms of marketing for counterterrorism and security measures, which of course is the way that the NSO group markets its own technology, the Pegasus technology, that it's meant only for going after terrorists and the worst criminals. And meanwhile, the evidence shows that it has been used over and over again against journalists and activists as well. So can you bring us into this wider scale, what we might even title a corporate corruption that goes on in Washington, apparently, and how it intersects with the Biden administration by taking us into your June 9th, 2021 article titled Corruption is What Other People Do. The Biden administration has embarked on a global anti-corruption campaign. It should start with Washington, where you draw out the links of now Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin to the Raytheon Company, their role in the production of Israel's Iron Dome system alongside Rafael, and then other members of the Biden administration, some of which you've already talked about.
So when I was thinking about the recent Gaza conflict, the recent tragedy in May, what I noticed is that there's a lot of corporate connections that aren't always being discussed, and chief among them being Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, having served on the board of Raytheon, one of the big five defense companies. And Raytheon itself, together with an Israeli contractor, is the co-producer of Iron Dome's components. So that's a bit wonky to say that. In a actual fact, the former defense company of the top military civilian official in the U.S., Lloyd Austin, his former company profits off of good press about the Iron Dome. And everyone in the media and elsewhere was rightly celebrating the success of this incredible technology that's able to intercept missiles coming from Gaza. And this isn't to say these technologies are bad. There is a huge positive dynamic to good technology deployed well. But one had to wonder if Austin's former colleagues at Raytheon were kind of celebrating when the defense secretary was saying very positive things about his former company. And it made me think more broadly how Biden's made this huge push for cybersecurity to have a really big role in the bigger national security architecture and planning. And a lot of the new cyber officials he's brought on have had big roles in companies that deal with ransomware. And it seems to me that conflicts of interest are very narrowly defined, when in actual fact, it seems like a lot of these things constitute conflicts of interest, or as I said, corruption is what other people do. If we were to look abroad and see similar self-dealing and so many people in Biden's inner circle having worked in defense companies and in the national security sector, in the private sector, then going on to do similar things in the public sector, there'd be a lot of questions raised. But apparently it's a little rude to say some of this stuff in Washington. So I tend to be a little bit of an outlier. But again, the thing that I think is really worth stating, Jeremy, is all this stuff is legal. I'm not trying to say any of this corruption is legally defined corruption, but what it is it constitutes all sorts of questions that need to be asked about the decisions being made in the Oval Office or in the rooms of the White House.
Let's focus just for a moment in terms of the NSO group story itself. One of the things that the NSO asserts is that the Pegasus software is not used in a domestic American context and that American phone numbers are not targeted. But meanwhile, the NSO group has its own American subsidiary of some sort based out of, I believe, Maryland, and it's called Westbridge. So instead of NSO group, it's titled Westbridge, and instead of the Pegasus software, the product, the surveillance product, is titled Phantom, and they have been apparently pitching it to American police departments, including in Southern California, but also to the Secret Service. And it doesn't seem like we have any more information about whether this technology was ever taken up. We don't have any evidence that it has been, mainly allegedly out of budgetary constraints. But this points to a deeper issue here in terms of these entanglements, in terms of people who are working on policy in an American context where they are representing a company that supposedly is just working on its image in a international capacity, but at the same time is working to sell its wares under a different name and under a different technological nomenclature to domestic police organizations. What can you say about this aspect of the story?
Well, I think NSO Group is doing two things at once, which is, on the one hand, they're producing this image of themselves and it's targeting just the bad guys, as their co-founder likes to say. They're transparent. They have a transparency and responsibility report that they just put out a month before these new revelations. If you look on their social media, they have a rave party when lockdown ends in Israel. They celebrate Pride Month and Earth Day, and they're a fun, loving tech company that's saving lives. But that's really hard to square with the second factor, or maybe the reality that the Washington Post and others have documented that it looks like 180 journalists, 14 world leaders were targeted, a huge amount of activists, dissidents, and organizers have been targeted by the Pegasus technology, that the real question lies. And that transparency report gets the sign off of lawyers and former officials to create a very positive image of NSO from a strict PR perspective. But in actual fact, there isn't much transparency about who they're selling the technology to. I was laughing when I saw one particular social media post that said NSO Group had turned down 5 clients on the basis of human rights issues or civil rights issues. And I thought to myself, well, there's more than 5 human rights violators in the world right now. And everybody wants this technology. It's been well reported and documented that leaders of gangs, of emirates and kingdoms and autocracies, they want to be able to trace their biggest critics. And obviously, this technology is not just something that falls into the category of a tech company or law enforcement. It's truly a cyber weapon. And they're just, as we see with all the reporting from groups like Amnesty, Forbidden Stories, this larger Washington Post investigation of the Israeli spyware company, there remain a ton of questions and a ton of new revelations on a day-to-day basis of what the NSO group really does.
And there's an aspect of this that ties into what former Prime Minister Netanyahu disclosed at the APEC conference in 2018. When he said that there are those that are going to boycott us, we're going to boycott you. And that was the immediate follow-up to Netanyahu's proclaiming of his work around the world in spreading Israeli technology, and not just the surveillance technology, the cyber technology, that which we could call cyber weapons, but also just Israeli civilian technology.
Israel is changing the world in India, in Asia, in Africa, in Latin America, everywhere. Now there are new industries. Israel is literally, how can I say this? Israel is literally driving the world. I'm talking about autonomous vehicles. Israel is a world leader in autonomous vehicles. 500 tech companies that sprang out almost instantaneously. And one of them, Mobileye, up there on the left, was just sold to Intel for a paltry sum of $15 billion. But the interesting thing is that Intel said to them, here are the keys to our 30 worldwide autonomous vehicle businesses. You run it. Israeli technology is driving the world. We went to Argentina, to Colombia, to Mexico, and they say, come back, come back. We want more. That is changing. All these countries are coming to us. India, China, Mongolia, Kazakhstan, all of them. Azerbaijan, Muslim countries. And you know what? The numbers, you remember people talked about Israel's isolation? Remember that? Israel's isolation? Pretty soon, the countries that don't have relations with us, they're going to be isolated. There are those who talk about boycotting Israel. We'll boycott them.
And now the reporting has shown that this was actually wherever Netanyahu went, it looks like these were the countries then where the Pegasus technology was then allowed to be deployed. And so there's an aspect of this that seems to then point at a macro policy by the Israeli government to respond to the potential for such nonviolent political acts against their long-term occupation, such as boycott, divestment, sanction, where there's a certain amount of corporate compromise and entanglement in terms of these products. You mentioned Microsoft earlier and its role with Israel. Microsoft had been awarded the Pentagon Cloud infrastructure contract over Amazon in a surprise fashion. It is now in the court system. But what was very interesting is that Microsoft, in the years in the run-up to the Pentagon Cloud contract, had acquired a Israeli military intelligence veteran-created company called Adalom and then put it in charge of its Azure Cloud app security. So there's an aspect of this where there is looks to be a strategic component from the Israeli state side in terms of its wrapping the American system up, and specifically Silicon Valley, and then these high-level advisors, so that they effectively cannot be boycotted somewhere down the road. If Americans were to begin to understand the nature of your journalism, that there's actually a national security and a foreign policy component to these kinds of enraptured high-level policy officials. Can you speak one last time to this question of the American corporate involvement in this intersection that's implied by the name West Exec and Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's creation of that? What is the name West Exec actually referred to geographically?
So West Exec Avenue is the closed off street next to the White House and the Eisenhower Executive Building. So it just evokes power or proximity to it. And Tony Blinken, along with Michelle Flournoy, former senior Obama defense official, started this firm in 2017, and I've been profiling and following their work over the last year or so, especially because at this point, 17 members of their firm and possibly more have snagged very powerful roles in the Biden administration. One client that I was able to reveal in my reporting that's really interesting is the surveillance company Windward, which uses AI, artificial intelligence, to track the seas in real time. Now, it has some positive uses. It's said to be able to catch sanctions, busting, and illegal smuggling. What was interesting to me is that the firm was founded by Gabi Ashkenazi, the former chief of staff to the Israeli army. And someone like David Petraeus was an investor. And what I'm trying to say here is West Exec Advisors, this very rarefied boutique firm, had told me, we don't represent governments, we don't lobby. But when you're talking about an Israeli tech company that has the buy-in of a former military leader, it obviously needs all sorts of sign-offs from the Israeli government to operate and sell its technology. So even if you're not technically representing a foreign government, strategic consultancies like West Exec Advisors are willing to get involved in some quite gray lines. And that's why I would say the behind the scenes work they do ends up looking a lot like lobbying. And as a result, I've been incredibly fascinated reading the financial disclosures of all the Biden officials, seeing who made millions of dollars working for Morgan Stanley, who was doing consulting work for other lesser known corporations, artificial intelligence companies with close ties to the United Arab Emirates. Obviously, the UAE has signed this accord with Israel, which creates a whole new market for a lot of these technologies. A lot of them were already being sold. So when a strategic consultancy like West Exec Advisors offers a kind of on-call National Security Council to corporations, one has to wonder, when all these fellows, Secretary of State on down, are serving in the Biden administration, does it affect how they make policy, how they execute policy? Are they thinking first about artificial intelligence companies whom they worked for as advisors when they're dealing with some of the biggest questions of the day about the ethics of responsible use of machine learning and killer robots, the most extreme example of this? So the thing that I've learned is that West Exec Advisors is one of dozens or more consulting firms in Washington, and it's never really clear what they do. They don't disclose their clients. Clients don't disclose who they hire. Even if you figure out that they did work for a company, you don't know exactly what that work was. And I'm not trying to say any of these people are bad people. I would just love some more transparency to be able to have a deeper sense of how Washington really works, because it sure seems like these financial interests, corporate interests, and tech interests now are a driving force in the Biden administration.
This is Jeremy Roth Gushel with Understanding Israel-Palestine Beyond the Walls. I've been speaking with Jonathan Geyer, the managing editor of The American Prospect. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Understanding Israel-Palestine Beyond the Walls on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.